The Claire Byrne Show on News Talk
with Aviva Insurance.
I have heard that double murderer Ian Huntley died at the weekend following an attack in prison. The former school caretaker had been serving a life sentence for the murder of best friends, 10-year-olds Holly Wells and Jessica Chapman, back in 2002. Well, Sean O'Neill is a senior writer for The Times who followed the story of Huntley closely at the time of the murders, and he joins me now. Sean, thank you for being with us this morning. I know you covered every beat of the case back when it happened. How do you feel about the news that Ian Huntley is dead?
God, that's a good question, Claire. How do I feel? I feel like it's no great loss. I mean, I know that sounds callous, but he wasn't a great asset to humanity, was he? So, no, I don't have any great strong feelings about him. I think what it does for myself and for anybody who was sort of closely following the case or closely involved in the case at the time, it kind of triggers a lot of memories and a lot of the sadness that those two girls, just 10 years old, lost all their futures, and the devastation it must have wreaked on their families was terrible.
So yeah, I think a lot
that's
of
what
us,
I think about.
A lot of us remember that time back in 2002, and I know you've gone back and you've been speaking to the lead investigator in the case, and his one regret from what he said to you is that Huntley never ever explained or tried to give any sort of insight into what happened to Jessica and to Holly.
No, he never did. He prolonged, you know, the agony of the families at the time. He was around the crime scene. He was the school caretaker, and the kind of the police operation and the media operation was all based around the school in the little village of Soham. And he was there laying out chairs at press conferences, hanging around, listening in to what was being said by the police. He knew he had killed those girls, that he'd hidden their bodies in a ditch, that he tried to burn the bodies, that he tried to burn their clothes. And he never, even when he was arrested, as his guilt became patently clear, he just kept that dark secret to himself and went to trial 18 months later, creating a completely fantastical story about one of them having a nosebleed and falling over and banging her head and the other one being strangled by accident. And it was just, there was so much nonsense, and it must have been hell for the families to sit through all of that, I think.
Mm-hmm. And yet all of those claims had to be disproved, didn't they? Which is why the investigation was so long and so detailed.
It had to be, they had to prove not just that Huntley had done it, they had to prove that nobody else could possibly have done it. So they went to extraordinary lengths to gather forensic evidence. There was evidence gathered from they found that he changed the tires on his car in the days after the murders. They found mud and soil on the underside of his car that could only have come from one particular place in East Anglia where there was a sort of million-year-old chalk seam that crossed the clay or something, and they found pollen and grains and things that that put him at the scene. It was incredibly detailed, and I remember at the time one of the things that really stuck out was this was the infancy of mobile phone forensic technology, and one of the missing things that the police had always been searching for was Jessica Chapman's lost mobile phone. And when they were eventually able to sort of triangulate that, the phone had been sort of switched off or smashed in one of three locations, and one of those was at Huntley's house, and that's what really clinched, made him the prime suspect in those early days.
I know you only spoke to him in passing, didn't you, to Huntley?
Yeah, but some of my colleagues had long conversations with him. One reporter in particular, Brian Farmer, had interviewed him and became so suspicious of his answers and the way he behaved that he went straight to the police and said, look, I think this is your man, And this was at the time when the police were fixated on the idea that it was a kidnapping or an abduction, not a murder.
And your time covering this case, you were there more or less over an 18-month period with eyes on this story, weren't you?
Well, there was a very intense couple of weeks at the beginning when the girls went missing. And then there was a period waiting for trial. And a lot of us reporters who were on the story initially we went up to Grimsby, where he came from, and researched his background and found that he'd had a very checkered history of being, assaulting young girls and preying on young girls, and a very violent man with an explosive temper. And it raised all sorts of questions about how he got a job as a school caretaker, and eventually led to a complete reform of the criminal record system and police intelligence gathering in Britain. Mm-hmm. And then, of course, there was that very, very dramatic trial at the Old Bailey where his girlfriend at the time, Maxine Carr, screamed across the court about him being a monster. And it really sort of consumed you for quite a long period of time.
Yeah, but I suppose if there's one good thing that came from it, it was the reform of those laws, so that there are much more, much tighter rules in place around those who work with children now and against whom complaints have been made.
Yeah. I mean, it's you have to have what they call a disclosure and bar in service certificate for any work you do with children. When I used to coach a boys' football team, and you had to have clearance from the FA and from the DBS check to be able to do anything like that at all. So it's much more rigorous than it used to be.
All right. Well, Sean, we'll leave it there. Thank you very much for speaking to us. Sean O'Neill there, senior writer for The Times in London, who covered the Ian Huntley case in great detail back in 2002 on the news over the weekend that he has died after an attack in prison.
The Clare Byrne Show
with Aviva Insurance.
Weekday mornings at 9 on News Talk. Conversation that counts.